Welcome to the new Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news on the local Colorado economy and initiatives that focus on the development of cybersecurity economics. You don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert to get plugged in. Your host, Chris Gorog, brings it straightforward, asks the tough questions, and brings the cyber world to a level of understanding for everyone. Chris is personable and opens up with our guests on the issues we all would like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join our host as he introduces the topic for today's New Cyber Frontier.
And this is Abe Thompson from SecureSet Studios here on the New Cyber Frontier. Today I have the privilege of Mr. Art Cooper joining us. He's the Senior Security Consultant at NewArts. Hello, Art. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
It's a delight. So how'd you end up where you are as a Senior Security Consultant?
And Oh, boy.
Yeah. We got all day.
Start at the beginning or just the two-second one?
Both. Whatever you want. We love talking here.
Well, you know, when I was a young kid, I'm originally from New England, so I grew up in rural Maine in a very small town, and I knew there was a lot more out there in the world. So I had always talked about joining the military. So when I turned 17, I boonswoggled my mom into signing all the papers, and off I went. I was a little baby. I got down to boot camp and joined the Air Force, got down there, and the drill sergeant couldn't believe how young I was. I was 17 all of a day, probably looked 17 months more like than 17 years.
Wow.
So then, you know, you get down there and they kind of test you and try to figure out what they're going to do with you. So I would just say that that's sort of how it started for me. And, you know, the things that I did in the military were more physical security related in the beginning. Sure. I was a combat controller, and then I got myself hurt. And after I got myself hurt, they retrained me. And the funny thing is, the nickname for the job they retrained me into was tech controller.
Yeah.
So it had that control word in there. And then, you know, I did some time in the military. When I got out, the climate in the mid 90s was a little different than it is now. And I had a job working for MCI, you know, back when that stood for money coming in. So what really got me passionate about the security was Mafia Boy, the young kid up in Canada. I think it was Toronto he was in, and he orchestrated the world's first major SYN attack, and he took down Amazon and eBay, and these were all in their infancy then. You
sure.
know, you're talking about a time when people weren't really prepared for that stuff.
Right, right.
And he went after us with a passion, and I had just literally designed and set up www.mci.com.
Wow.
And he went after that thing with a passion. We were running that on four Enterprise 450 servers in the Omaha data center.
Sure.
And he was just taking them down, just, and that was it. That day I swore, you know what, I'm going to spend the rest of my life stopping stuff like this.
Finding that kid. Did you ever find him?
Yeah, they found Mafia Boy. He, in fact, if you Google him, somebody said to me once, he's a good looking kid, and that's what got him in trouble. I think he went to school. He was like a high school or young kid when he did it, and he bragged, you know, he's probably trying to impress the girls. I'm not sure, but that's how they found him. I remember the FBI came in, and we were working with them and the Secret Service. And, it was quite an event. He really made quite a name for himself. I'm not sure what kind of punishment he got in Canada, but he really, the thing is, he woke us all up.
Yeah, because, that's the good part.
You know, that's the best part that came out of it, because the only firewalls we had were really, the Cisco PIX was on the horizon, and that was nothing more than an IP/port-based device. There was no, you know, inspection going on at any kind of level of looking at TCP connections or anything. So when he was throwing those, empty packets with a bunch of HTTP gets at all the websites with fake IP addresses. Nobody had ever done that.
Yeah. People at that point barely knew what a website was. You know, I remember those early 90s. I remember my first Prodigy email, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of, sorry, it wasn't MCI. But
No, that's okay. There was so one of the things I didn't say is I had a 5-year break in service where I left active duty, and I was a guard. And during those 5 years, I worked for GE and Honeywell. And I actually was involved in setting up Genie, which was GE's answer to Prodigy.
Sure.
And so I remember those things well, Prodigy, Genie, and TimeNet and ByteNet, some of those other old X25 offerings that we had out there. It's kind of funny times, you know. But I mean, the thing is, it's just like that book that Cliff Stoll wrote, The Cuckoo's Egg. I was actually stationed over in Germany when that kid was doing that stuff, and he was using TimeNet and ByteNet, and he was actually a kid in Berlin.
Sure.
It's always these kids, you know, they go out and they stumble upon things.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the frightening parts of our business, for sure, is that it's not always a well ensconced nefarious adversary. Sometimes it's an accident. Sadly.
It is. Yeah. It is, either from the outside or the inside. Yeah. Sometimes the folks on the inside don't realize that when they download that very helpful utility, it's doing more than helping them.
Yep. Let's take a quick break and go hear from our sponsor.
Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
And this is Abe Thompson from SecureSet Studios here on the new Cyber Frontier. We have with us Mr. Art Kerpuher, who's the Senior Security Consultant at NewArx. You know, Art, we've been talking about a little bit of cybersecurity history and kind of your journey. Tell us a little bit about what you're doing at NewArx and some other things you've been up to.
Sure. I've kind of been involved with the PCI, the Payment Card Industry Data Security Standard, since its inception. So throughout my journeys, I had landed down at Home Depot in Atlanta, and I was working down there as chief security engineer for the CISO. And so we got caught up in a lot of these different assessments that the payment card brands would do. So I got involved in PCI at a very early stage. And when I came back here to Colorado Springs after working in the defense industry again for a couple of years, I went to work for a little company called Amberon LLC, which became TrustWave, which a lot of people have heard of. They're a fairly large company now. And so I got involved with PCI very, very early on. I was in some of the earliest discussions and conferences and what have you about it, and went to the first PAQSA class and some of the first QSA classes. And so I've been doing PCI assessments and PCI work ever since. I took a 3-year break to actually work for the PCI Council. So I worked directly for the PCI Council as the trainer, and I used to train all the QSAs. And so QSA stands for Qualified Security Assessor. And there's not that many of us. I think there's only about 1,400 of us in the world still, because they make it very tough to become a QSA. You have to be working for a QSA company that's been accredited by PCI before you can be a QSA. So it's not a portable certification. But that's what I've been doing at NewArx, and I really enjoy it. I've been working with very large banks and very large merchants, very large chains of food service restaurants. In fact, most of my customers, you've been to them many, many times and used your payment card.
Sure,
and so
sure.
I've been working with them and trying like heck to keep them all out of the news.
Yeah, I may have heard of the Home Depot and a couple of those others once or twice. A
few times, yep.
Were you here, so you were back in Omaha with MCI, or did you ever work here in the Springs?
I was here in the Springs with MCI. I was down there at the old Garden of the Gods, the old IBM facility down there, back when we had all the buildings.
That's changed names a few times.
Yeah, I know. I think it's Verizon's got parts and pieces of it, but there's also some other stuff tucked in there now.
Sure.
It sure has changed names.
Sure. Definitely. Awesome. So kind of absorbed there. And then what is NewArx doing right now?
NewArx is a QSA company, so we are solidly focused at performing PCI assessments. But we also do security management. The big problem with the payment card industry is the way it's divided. Is a merchant is going to be decided on a what we call a level, and it's decided on how many transactions, not dollar amount, but how many actual card transactions
sure, sure.
they do. So, you know, everybody wanted to go out and work with the big level ones because that meant they did more than 6 million transactions a year. So when I was at TrustWave, that's all they wanted to work with. They didn't want to mess with the little folks. And at Newark's, we decided that way down low at the bottom, the level four is like you've got a guy who maybe owns three Jimmy John's franchises, right, or a guy that owns five Burger King's. Well, he has to be compliant with the PCI requirements too.
Yeah.
But, you know, unfortunately, he doesn't have an IT department, or so they were really kind of lost. And so that was kind of the charter of what we did at Newark's. And, of course, we've grown it from there.
Sure.
But we still take care of those little guys. So we've got probably close to 100 people that are sitting in Detroit where we're headquartered, mm-hmm, and they're managing firewall systems and scanning systems and different things like that remotely for these small clients that just don't have the people to do it. They're acting as a mini SOC, if you will.
Sure. So if people are looking at the industry, how different is and are the requirements to, say, go into work as a QSA versus like an auditor, say, at Oracle or one of these other places? What are some of the similarities and differences there?
Well, the big, I can tell you, the similarities are actually few. And the big differences are the fact that the PCI requirements, as prescriptive as they are, mm-hmm, they're a environmental standard. And what I mean by that is, unfortunately, the only thing that each merchant has in common is the fact that they have no commonality. So every time you walk into an organization, you're looking at an entirely different environment. And one of the terms that we use in PCI all the time is CDE, the cardholder data environment. And then we also use the term scope, what's in scope and what's not in scope. And it's very difficult for some of these merchants to realize that if they don't segment things properly, everything they have is in scope. Yeah. And, you know, they get very frustrated because they find out when we come in, it's like, you have got to keep your point of sale stuff completely isolated from all of this other stuff, or you're going to end up in the news. And so that's probably the most difficult part. So as a QSA, I think you're sort of, you're part analyst, part designer, because generally you go in, you analyze what they have, and then you have to design something else for them and work with them to figure out what they can afford, A, B, what they desire, and C, what's going to work to make them compliant. And then the sad thing is that, you know, remember, compliance is the floor, not the ceiling. You're trying to get these people secure, but a lot of them, you can't even get them to the level of compliance, which is the minimum level that's required.
Yeah.
So it's a constant challenge. So as a QSA, you have to know a little bit about everybody's jobs. You're sort of a jack of all trades and a true master at none, but unfortunately it has to be that way.
Well, that's not a bad thing in cybersecurity discipline to be a generalist. Certainly you pick your niche and you can go down that avenue, but we also want, you know, guys that can work across the spectrum. Yeah.
And I think the reason that I've stayed here, I had risen to very high levels in my career, and then I just made the conscious decision to get back down here and stay with this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a couple of things. I've always suffered from what I call techno stress. I can't stand if something new comes out that's going to help folks or secure things and I don't know about it. So, you know, it just drives me nuts. So it's one of the reasons why I love working within the PCI realm, because it forces you to stay current.
Yeah.
Because you're going to walk into a merchant. We do a lot of work with convenience stores too,
yeah.
Banks. You know, you'll go into one bank and you'll think, wow, this is a great setup. And then you'll go into another large bank, you know, banks that you know very well, I've walked into, and they've shocked me with what they have.
Yeah.
And so you're sort of forced to be a generalist in all areas, and you have to stay current with so many different things. And I think that's why I like it. I like to constantly be challenged.
Well, I've heard many people say that the finance industry has always kind of led and been more efficient on the compliance side because of the fiduciary responsibility they already had. Is that what you've seen? Have they kind of been a little bit ahead or?
Actually, no.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, you'll hear that because the problem is that when you talk to a bank auditor, when a bank auditor goes in, and I have the utmost respect, I don't claim to be a bank auditor.
Sure.
But when a bank auditor goes into a bank or a financial institution, they're looking at the so-called accounting controls. In fact, back in the day, they used to do what they call the SAS 70. And I think it stands for like standard accounting standards or something like that. And again, I'm not a bank auditor. But the thing is, you know, from those perspectives, the bank auditors for years would say how tight and how great everything was with banks. And then when a QSA goes in, we're looking at everything totally different. What we're looking at is we're chasing all of the card data from the total amount of data that it takes to issue that one plastic card. And we follow that data everywhere it goes throughout these financial institutions. And then they find out, you know, this stuff's not segmented. It's all over the place. And then they realize that, yeah, we're doing great from an accounting and accounting auditing position, but from an IT security position, it's been my experience that actually I would say less than 30% of the financial institutions I've worked with, and I've worked with many, less than 30% of them are in a position where they're even minimally compliant. And so I actually love working with them because I take that as a challenge and love to see what they look like when we get done with them. Exactly.
Let's take a quick minute and go hear from our sponsor.
Security Services are your cybersecurity experts with decades of experience providing professional training services for our clients in various industries. We offer professional training and certification in areas of cybersecurity, safety, health, and environmental services at our academy. Our in-person and online training provides a collaborative environment where students can interact directly with instructors through live chats or in private classrooms. Visit MurraySecurityServices.com for more information.
Hello, this is Abe Thompson back with you on the new Cyber Frontier from SecureSet Studios here in Colorado Springs. We have Mr. Art Pooper, who is a senior security consultant at NewArcs. So, you know, we're kind of sitting here looking at the next thing. You know, you've been in the PCI industry. You've been, you know, you've been able to work with these QSAs. What is the scary thing on the horizon that you want to see us tackle as an industry?
I think the real, well, it's kind of twofold. I'll tell you the thing that scares me the most is the fact that we've lost sight of basics. You know, I as a person who goes back literally to 1978 in terms of working on security related things, yes, I am that old. you know, it's scary because what I see is we've lost sight of what I call basic things. Sure. You know, in the military, we had our old orange books and we did all these kind of crazy things with systems. But even before that, the military used to teach you literally from the point you entered about role-based access control. Everybody in the military knew that there were secret things around. Yep. And even if they were a cook, they knew that if they didn't have the right clearance and they didn't have the right ID and they didn't have the need to know, they weren't going to get access. And we've lost that. Just as a generation of folks, my kids, you know, all my kids coming up through, I think we've lost that. So that's a big worry to me, is that this is the reason why we see so many compliance regulations now, because people have just lost sight of what I call security 101. Yeah. So I think that's a huge challenge. And I would like to see, I think it's one of the reasons why I volunteer all the time, anything that's involved with education or speaking to groups or to help educate folks, I jump on that. I'll take that time to do that. So that's a huge problem. But the biggest thing, in my opinion, is bring your own device. BYOD is killing us. It doesn't matter what you do. You can secure something all day long, and all it's going to take is one guy with an Android phone who figures out how to get a certificate in it and get online and start doing whatever it is he wants to do, or figures out how to use it to get in remotely. And it's just very – it's kind of scary, because what happens with these small – kind of handheld devices and the watches and all the other, and you know, it's going to get worse. The Internet of Things, the IoT yeah. stuff just scares the Jesus out of me. Yeah. And I think that's our biggest challenge, is sort of bring your own device / IoT stuff. You know, it's one of my colleagues, Wally Magda, funny guy. He does a talk. He was a utilities guy for years, and he does a talk about a fry pan that's on the Internet. And he says, we need to put a fryer wall between that pan and the Internet. And, you know, you think about it, it's really kind of, isn't that ridiculous? Why does a fry pan need to be on the Internet, you know?
Yeah.
It's getting really to the point where it's easy for these bad guys to find vulnerabilities in this IoT stuff. and then get in and escalate privileges. So it's really, I would like to see us take the so-called Internet of Things and come up with some so-called maybe IoT standards that we force the manufacturers to follow.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. You know, we're a consumer generation, and so, yeah, it can get completely carried away, you know, with the IoT piece. You mentioned something about the way we used to kind of do it in the military, you know, role-based access. And you know, what was probably most effective about, you know, and we're not saying that we do it because it's the way we used to do it, but what's most effective, I think, about that is that we were teaching people the why.
That's right.
Back then. And
that's
so
exactly right.
The why really serves as a great foundation that can allow us to deal with some of these newer technologies. But if you understand the why, then your attention to security detail is going to be just as
that's robust. Exactly right. You're 100% correct. You know, one of my favorite quotes from General Patton, he stated, never tell people how to do things.
Yeah.
Tell them why it must be done and let them figure the damn how out.
Yeah.
You know, that I've always loved that quote by him because that's very true. And it's still true. And you're right. We used to teach people, why are we doing this? You know, we used to do application seminars where we would show young GIs, this is why we're doing this. But there were also things, even I remember in elementary school in Maine, there were things that were shown to us and told to us as children as to why we lock our door or why we do the things that we do. And I don't see us doing that anymore. We're so worried now about offending somebody that it's difficult to say why. And Lord knows I don't want to offend anyone, but I think we need to slip that why back in there somehow.
The offense generation. So what is this? What is the approach to kind of, you know, you'll never control the IoT. We know that. The standard sounds good. You'll never control the BYOD completely. So what's an intermediary solution?
Yeah, the intermediary solution is what I call, my clients love it, I call it the M&M solution. Mm-hmm. We have your gooey chocolate in the center, and we just put a nice crispy, hard, secure shell around it.
Sure.
And unfortunately, that's kind of, you know, it's funny, isn't it? For the many leaps that we take forward in the security business, we always end up going back to the basics like they did at the Bastille. It just always makes me laugh. It always goes back to it, the M&M theory, the Bastille theory, whatever you want to call it. It really is what you have to do. We have been keeping track of the forensic data of card breaches, and the PCI Council shared that with us in Vancouver a few weeks ago. And what they showed us was the two highest problems were unpatched systems and access control. And what was cool is I probably could have told you that, but then they had data. That's what was so neat about it. We had like 400 or I forget if it was either 400 or 500 of these forensic studies, and you could see this defined, they graphed them, and you could see this very defined scale of where systems that weren't patched properly and systems that were not locked down properly for access were the culprits. And so it goes back to that Bastille, that M&M theory. You've got to put that hard chocolate shell around the gooey chocolate.
Sure. And uniformly, does that collide, though, with, say, privacy and GDPR and some of these other now influences that we have to attend to?
It does. And that's why what happens is with access anymore, it used to be you just eliminated somebody's access. Now it has to be controlled access.
Sure.
And that's what's very difficult. Even when you're working on segmentation, if you're trying to segment, let's say, a corporate network from a production network and then from a network that's processing financial transactions or payment transactions or some security stuff for the military, it's very difficult because there are so many crossovers and there are people that don't really have what I would call a full need to know, but they have a partial need to know because of the very things you mentioned. And so it becomes a very tough gambit. Sometimes I make a joke with my clients and I say, we're turning your firewall into a smoke screen because we're allowing so many holes in it. And unfortunately, if the hole is justified, you're kind of stuck with it. So I think that, you know, the challenge for us as security professionals is better tools, better habits and monitoring our systems, and better configuration control. That's one of the biggest reasons that, like I had said, unpatched systems, that goes back to configuration management.
You know, if you
very look, important.
If you look at the you know, this problem with sort of things that are in development and getting thrown on the internet, maybe not with security implications afforded to them, we might be some of the problem ourselves. Because, you know, we're now complaining that, hey, we've been relegated to a cybersecurity department, when in reality we should be completely integrated throughout the organization. Do you think that if we do a better job of fully integrating, so when folks are in development, when folks are in, hey, I've got this crazy wild idea, let's make it happen, that we'll get plugged in a better sense?
Oh yeah, that's crucial. That was one of the things, one of the most important things when I was at Home Depot, was getting involved in forcing that issue, because everything was stovepiped. And what would happen is one department would go off on a tangent and do something. And so then we started various boards, and it got much better because we finally, and it went back to what you said. We went back to the why, and we explained to them, look, you have to have security introduced day one. And one of the biggest problems that I learned as a result of being in various organizations and working with various organizations, I hate the fact that most CISOs are reporting up to CIOs. And if they're not reporting to CIOs, they're reporting to CTOs. The CISO should be level. There should never be a CISO under a CTO or a CIO. It's wrong.
Well, and it's literally a violation of the policy now.
That's right.
Of duties and
everything. That's right. It's the fox watching the hen house. That's all it is. Yeah. It just doesn't work. I've watched it fail. I've been a part of organizations that were configured that way. And it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. It's going to fail. And it doesn't matter how many times I've heard speeches by folks saying, no, this is how it has to be. It's like, well, you're wrong. That CISO has to have that same level of power, because without it, it just doesn't make them equals. It just doesn't work.
So back to that really cool analogy, the M&M, how does the crunchy outer shell actually work and look today?
Yeah, today the way it looks is very different than it used to be. You know, it used to be we had to have a whole bunch of physical boxes, and with the exception of the government, most people are moving into the cloud. And so that crunchy shell can many times not be anywhere near any of your physical property or even your logical property. So it's a very different look. The cloud, for lack of a better term, even though myself, I remember when it first started getting used, I accused MCI marketing of making it up. but you know, and then you hear people say, well, that just means it's somebody else's computer. Well, kind of, sort of, but there's a lot more going on there. And as we see more and more things moving into AWS and moving into Azure, I found out at the ISSA summit last week that Sally May has moved completely into the cloud. They're completely within AWS. And the gentleman gave a really informative briefing. I have a client that's a bank, and I'm not at liberty to say what the bank's name, but that bank has gone into AWS.
Wow.
And I worked with them for a long period as they did that. And so today, the crunchy shell is not a bunch of 1U or 2U appliances that sit in your data center or in a colocation facility. Many times it's a mixture of service providers that are cloud-based, or maybe they have equipment in their data center that you are passing through on the way to the cloud. There are a lot of different ways that we can control segmentation now. So I think that's what makes this job so important, and that's what makes this next generation of young folks coming up. I have a lot of faith in them, but I also feel frustrated that I can't get my hands on all of them and try to help them and teach them and help them grow through it, because it you know, as much as the cloud has been touted as simplifying your life, it's simplified it in some ways, from cost and from logistical management and, you know, some of those things. You know, higher levels will tell you, yeah, it's very simple. But when you have those types of configurations and types of environments, which we're going to see more and more of until the next big thing comes along, it takes some very special and talented folks with some very, very precise skill sets to make sure that if you're building S3 buckets in AWS, the things that can get in and out of those S3 buckets are things that you want getting in and out of those. I mean, we've already seen some really bad breaches. In fact, one of the company's breach is the actual name of the company, I believe, that had a hack hit them. Remember the breach systems? They were like web application firewalls, like cloud-based. And they were breached recently. And, you know, that's kind of messed up because that's a company that's supposed to be like an Akamai or somebody else, you know, protecting you, or a Cloudflare, you know, these big guys that are saying, hey, you know, we got this.
Yeah.
And then you find out they ain't got this. So that's my frustration, is that the M&M shell is a, you remember when Star Trek used to play three-dimensional chess? That's how I look at the shell now. There's parts of the shell are in a different realm. It's not that nice, round, hard piece that we had our hands on.
Sure. Well, and it's unfortunate because, you know, I'm sure everybody out there is clamoring for confidence. And so you see a positive indicator like Sally Mae has gone to the cloud, but then you hear about breach. And so how do we know when we're there?
Yeah, that's the ticket, isn't it? If I can figure that out, I'll let you and everybody else know. That's the tough thing. I don't know that we'll ever, you know, that's you've definitely hit the sensitive spot on all of this. And it's one of the reasons the government has just set back. The federal government, I mean, and they get breached too. That's what's so funny. They get hacked all the time. But they, you know, I think that's what makes them even more petrified about going into the cloud, because they've been hacked and they thought they had the best breed stuff.
So apparently I've created a need for a future podcast with Art once we get that all solved. But ladies and gentlemen, I've had with us Mr. Art Krueper here on the new Cyber Frontier. It's been a pleasure to have you with us, Art, and thanks for coming out and giving us your time.
Anytime. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Outstanding. This is Abe Thompson signing out from the SecureSet Studios here in Colorado Springs on the new Cyber Frontier.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of New Cyber Frontier. Remember, please follow and participate as New Cyber Frontier is supporting a grassroots community effort to empower the individual in the digital age. Check it out at privacyforthepeople.org. Also, make sure to join our mailing list so we can keep you informed. If you have an idea, if you have a question you would like to hear answered, or if you just want to get involved in what we're doing, reach out to us at newcyberfrontier.com. We also encourage you to visit our sponsors' links, because they are the ones that really make this show possible. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode of New Cyber Frontier.